Join the Colorado Ag News Network and Farmcast Radio at this time as Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. We have a great deal to discuss again within this month's interview. But welcome back inside the barn, Jerry. Boy, this hot and dry weather just continues. It's devastating crops in large portions of the state and playing havoc for those of us trying to get work done during the day outside.
Absolutely. It is warm and good. Morning, Brian. It's always good to talk with you. I think I saw on the news today of the 17 or 16 days so far that we have had in August, we have had one average day, one below average, which was 2 degrees. It was in the 80s, and all the other ones are above average in 90-degree days. So indeed, it's been a hot one. It's been a scorcher. You're seeing some crops damaged by the heat. Those that still have irrigation and water around are hoping to survive this. So agriculture is dealing with Mother Nature again, from nasty storms in June to drought, to drought the 2 months before the nasty storm. So challenging times for agriculture, but that's all right. Us eternal optimists. It'll be better. It'll get better.
Well, and it's been devastating on the livestock industry as well, with the pastures drying up, and the USDA and Farm Service Agency on August 7th announced changes for emergency haying and grazing of acres enrolled in the Conservation Reserve Program. That could help some. There were 50 counties that are now eligible. I'm not going to say them all, but there's 50 counties. I can tell you the one that's not in there is Weld County, but everything around Weld County to the east and south is eligible. You got any comments about the FSA open up the CRP for emergency hay and grazing?
You know, it's something, Brian, that has needed to be done. And quite honestly, the unfortunate part is part of those contracts for the grazing is you have to be off of the CRP 30 days before the frost, which is basically the first part of September. So that doesn't leave us a lot of options for grazing, but we can still hay it. We need to work through some of that and understand why, and I do not understand why that we cannot be on that CRP ground 30 days before the frost. It has been a tough summer for grazing and livestock producers. I have never in all my years of ranching pulled my cattle off of grass in the month of July. We have started to pull cow-calf pairs off in July because of the drought. So feed are going to be an issue, especially for those young and beginning farmers and ranchers that are trying to deal with their cow herds.
Yeah, for emergency haying, producers are limited to just one cutting. They are permitted to sell that hay, and participants must remove all hay from CRP acres within 15 days after baling and remove all livestock from CRP no later than 1 day after the end of the emergency grazing period. And of course, as I mentioned, there will be no CRP annual rental payment reduction for emergency haying and grazing authorizations. You can learn more once again by contacting your local FSA office, and you must do so if you're going to turn out on cattle or do swathing. Do that before you do any of that stuff. I just want to give you the warning there. You can also learn more at farmers.gov/recover. Wanted to move on to a very hot topic around the country right now, especially during the August recess that those legislators in D.C. are on right now. The mail-in ballots and the United States Postal Service funding in the latest coronavirus pandemic funding issue that's going on right now. You got any thoughts on that?
You know, Brian, our post office does a wonderful job. It's unfortunate that those in D.C. and even those here in Colorado, political officials want to turn this into a political argument. You know, the president had authorized money to go to the Postal Service to help them, and we know that they operate in the red and have for a number of years. He has tried to help them, and then all of a sudden now, in order for the Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives to move forward on something, they want their own pork in that to help the Postal Service with mandating an all mail-in ballot. Those type of things, and that just, I don't understand why politics has to work that way in Washington, D.C., and why Colorado wants to weigh in on those type of political maneuvers. Here's what I would tell you. We do it fairly well in Colorado, and Colorado ought to do elections the way Colorado wants. Nebraska ought to do the way Nebraska wants. Each state ought to be able to do their elections the way they want, instead of Congress telling everybody in across the country that you will do a mail-in ballot. Now, I won't talk about the fraud aspects and those things. You can look at those in the news, but here's what I will tell you. I believe they said that mail-in ballots are fine as long as you mail them 8 days in advance. Wow. 8 days in advance doesn't give me much security. Matter of fact, I'd ask myself this question. If I won the lottery and had a lottery ticket, would I mail it to go check it in to make sure I collect, or would I hand deliver it? That should be an individual responsibility and not mandated by government. And so to politicize this has been infuriating to me, and shame on our governor and secretary of state and our attorney general by making this another political issue.
Speaking of those individuals, Governor Jared Polis, Colorado U.S. Senator Michael Bennett, Secretary of State Janet Griswold, Attorney General Phil Weiser, and Denver Clerk and Recorder Paul Lopez are holding a press conference today in about 30 minutes from the time of this interview at the Denver Elections Division. And they're going to be talking about the mail-in voting and vote by mail and refuting President Trump's false claims. So we'll try to get the audio, or maybe you share the video from that press conference if you want to watch it on the Barnes Facebook page. I'm really excited to watch that, Jerry, let me tell you.
it's probably like all those other briefings that our governor has done, where he has taken this war on rural Colorado and taken a COVID briefing as his platform to make a political statement that's anti-agriculture or anti-livestock, antibiotics, or regarding antibiotics in livestock. This has become a complete and utter embarrassment in Colorado, the way this governor has handled not only those issues, as well as the issues regarding the destruction of the Capitol.
Once again, my guest is Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. Yeah, and it really has turned into a war on rural Colorado, hasn't it? Especially with the non-rural appointments to boards and commissions by this governor. Seems like he's taken it the position, if you donate to him privately, you're going to get on a board or on a commission.
And I don't know what his criteria is to get on those boards or commissions. I just know that there haven't been any from eastern Colorado that we can be proud of. The latest one, obviously, is the State Veterinary Board, the board that oversees our veterinarians in the state, and his appointment of a vegan activist. Now, I don't care what they eat, but if you're an activist of something that veterinarians take care of animals, from my perspective, that becomes a challenge to have a person to disrupt a board that is to oversee veterinarians. And that becomes a challenge for us in rural Colorado, especially those of us in large animal agriculture. I mean, you don't have to look very far, and you have the State Fair Board, where each the idea was in that board structure is to have someone from each of the four congressional districts, so you have statewide representation. And what the governor did is removed the current member from the fourth congressional district, which is all of the Eastern Plains, and replaced that person with a person from Boulder County. And yes, there is a sliver of Boulder County, Longmont, in the 4th Congressional District. So west of I-25 is the person that runs a farmer's market, was appointed to run the fair board or be the board member from the 4th Congressional District. That has become a challenge as well. And then, of course, he has made all of these boards political. The fair board affiliated and one Republican is the way his new structure is there. And then, of course, you have Parks and Wildlife. We've talked about the Parks and Wildlife appointments before. The Eastern Plains, the eastern one-third of the state where we have a number of hunting and fishing opportunities, we have state parks, we have wildlife areas, we have walk-in areas on state lands. We have a most recent appointment, a former county commissioner in the mountains in Jackson County. That commissioner moved out to Ray, Colorado, and he appointed that commissioner to represent the Eastern Plains with very little experience whatsoever from the Eastern Plains. So, quite honestly, it is indeed frustrating to see these appointments, to know that the Eastern Plains is being ignored. Here's just a couple of numbers that you might find interesting. There are roughly, I looked at 25 boards or commissions that affected rural Colorado. 220 of those appointments, voting appointments, 12 were from the Eastern Plains. And that includes water, like the Water Quality Control Commission. We have one person that was just appointed from Lahana to represent all of the Eastern Plains, and that includes agriculture, who uses 85% of the water in the state of Colorado, the South Platte, the lower South Platte, where a number of farmers and ranchers reside and use that water along with those small communities. We now have a board, the Water Quality Control Commission, demanding what levels are met, changing the numbers without respect to these small communities and how it would affect those communities.
Just so folks know, 12 out of 225 on those board appointments, that's less than 5% coming from rural Colorado. It's 5.33333. And then getting back to the appointment to that State Board of Veterinary Medicine, Ellen Kessler is the lady you were talking about. The Colorado Livestock Association sent a letter in response to that appointment to Governor Polis. And that also came off of a change.org petition that was started by the fence post and Rachel Gable. You can check out that whole article at thefencepost.com. But also, if you want to stand up for rural Colorado, you can actually sign that online petition to retract Ellen Kessler's appointment to the Colorado State Board of Veterinary Medicine by going to change.org/showingupfp. Of course, the FP would be fence post. But you can check out the links posted online inside the barn. You know, it sounds like a great idea, Jerry, but knowing this governor, if you look back on his history with folks that want something done, he seems to say one thing and then does what he wants anyway. So I'm not sure the online petition is going to make much of a difference, but I hope it does. I guess that's what I want to say there.
Well, the interesting part about this, Brian, is that these all have to be confirmed by the Senate. And we have had opportunities to stop a couple of appointments, including State Fair. But Democrat leadership in the Senate used political maneuvering so that would never come to a vote, so the governor could continue to utilize the person he had appointed that was not going to get confirmed. This is not uncommon, and I think, however, that some of that may change next year. There may be enough pressure. If you look at all the pressure coming from the people of Colorado, and silly things. Another example, on Parks and Wildlife, there are supposed to be 3 agriculture representatives to represent agriculture on that board to have those discussions, to be able to present agriculture's perspective when it comes to wildlife, since we provide, 70% of all wildlife resides on private property, at least some aspects of their life. So private property and farmers and ranchers have to have that type of working relationship. And one of the appointments he made is an Aspen, a guy from Aspen that runs some sort of agriculture education type thing, which deals primarily with local grown products, that type of deal, and not actual ag production that is necessary for wildlife participation. This is frustrating times, but we'll see what the next legislative session brings. I believe I have a couple of people across the aisle that are willing to work with us in rural Colorado to help at least modify some of these appointments.
Well, on those appointments that he's making right now, you guys have to approve those next legislative session. So in Kessler's instance, she's not on the board yet.
No, actually, she is on the board yet. She is serving, but still has to be confirmed.
Gotcha.
She can serve, and if we do not confirm her, then she has to be removed from the board. And what has happened in the past, when those didn't come up for a vote, they weren't confirmed, so they withdrew them and then reappointed them. That was the political maneuvering that was done. Now, if we vote them down, if the confirmation is actually voted down, they can't do that. They can't do that process. So we'll see what happens.
Let's just hope that there's no directives that come out of that committee between now and then. Otherwise, they would need to be overturned as well, especially if they were anti-agriculture. Once again, my guest, Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. Wanted to move on here. You want to talk about rural cooperatives and the PUC.
You know, it's an interesting dynamic that we have right now. The Public Utilities Commission has taken a couple of hearings. And in those hearings, there are a couple of cooperatives that want out of their contracts with Tri-State. And I understand the frustration that it has become somewhat expensive to buy electricity from Tri-State, some of the decisions that Tri-State has made. But when you have a contract with somebody and have members on the board that make those decisions, and you allow a couple of large cooperatives to decide to leave that family, that means all the other co-ops, such as your Poudre Valley Co-op, Highline, YW, Southeast, all of those are going to have to pick up the debt and the cost, which means higher rates for you and me and all of our rural constituents, to allow them out of that contract. Now, if they want out of that contract and buy out of that contract, then they need to figure out what that price is. The problem is they didn't like what that price is, so they went to the PUC, and the PUC has taken this case. That is frustrating to some of us that actually believe when you sign a contract that you need to follow through with that contract and be a part of that contract. And I know my constituents out here that buy a lot of electricity for irrigation and sprinklers and those type of things, elevators that have to pay that higher cost, that is just another added cost to agriculture. So all I'm asking is the PUC, part of the issue is that those co-ops were not able to weigh in at the PUC. So all I'm asking is, PUC, reopen up that hearing. Allow our co-ops to present evidence, because the statute requires you to hear from anybody that is affected if they want to participate, and our co-ops were not able to participate. So that's a frustrating process that we're trying to work through. We'll see how it works out. There are several of us legislators that have a letter that will be sent to the PUC this week asking them to reopen those hearings so that our co-ops can actually have a voice.
It's frustrating for the member that own the co-ops as well, that are, because it's a member-owned business model, but some of this could be inflicted because of the renewable energy mandates that were put on several years ago, Jerry, when they didn't claim that hydropower was renewable.
That's indeed part of it. The other part of it that became frustrating was, for example, Tri-State decided without the mandate to close down, to cut a deal with the governor and close down their coal-fired plants in western Colorado that they use for electricity. Now, if it's not the most economical electricity, I understand that, but to eliminate that tool from the toolbox does not make sense from my perspective. And that has actually driven up the cost of energy that Tri-State is providing as well. And so it's a double-edged sword here. Tri-State has done some of the things that has made their electricity more expensive than other places, which is why some of the co-ops or a couple of the big co-ops want out of that contract. And then, but those other co-ops also have board members on Tri-State that this owned by the consumers themselves, they have board members on Tri-State to make these decisions. So it's frustrating. It's maddening. It's expensive. And it's something we're going to have to sort through and figure out.
Yeah, it is a conundrum. Some of it is self-inflicted, as you mentioned, and then some of it became because they did not have renewable energy listed for hydropower, which still baffles me because I know quite a bit of their power came from that, and I don't understand why that wasn't included other than the money that followed the solar and the wind power side of the equation back in Hickenlooper's administration. Wanted to move on here. You wanted to talk about the ballot initiatives that are coming up this fall. That is not very far away. In fact, they'll be mailing ballots out, mid-October?
They will be mailing ballots out in, about 6 weeks, seven weeks, something like that. We're not very far away. There are a couple of ballot initiatives that I'm very proud of. One of them is my ballot initiative, the ballot initiative to reduce the state income tax from 4.63% to 4.55%. And I know that doesn't sound like much. And originally when I drafted the proposal and I've run bills in the legislature to reduce the income tax burden, when I have done that, it's because that we have had a Tabor refund. And rather than allow government to keep that money for a year and then refund it, my thought process, let's just allow people to keep that money up front rather than have to go through the process of government refunding it. Since the pandemic and the reduction in our budget and the anticipation of lost revenue, that is even more of a reason for me, quite honestly, to support a tax reduction, because there were people that were without work for 2 months, 3 months, and there's a number of them that continue to be without work. And those people shouldn't be burdened with higher taxes. Government should actually bear some of the brunt of this as well and tighten their belts rather than increase, which leads me to the second ballot proposal that I'm pretty proud of, that I'm wholly supportive of, is the government has decided to try and get around Tabor by just raising fees. And we have seen a number of those fees raised just most recently through rulemaking processes. And those actually are in lieu of tax. We have used fees and then taken that money and used them for something else. And so there is a ballot initiative that says if you're going to substantially raise fees, you have to take that to the vote of the people as well, just like you raise taxes. I'm excited for those to be on the ballot. I'm excited that we're finally taking on a government that is not responsive to the people of Colorado and does things to just shove things down our throat. I'm anxious to talk about those in the future, and we'll do so probably again next month on this show when we know more of what ballot initiatives are indeed on the ballot.
Yeah, and they seem to want to renumber them. I know the Wolf one's been changed. The numbers have changed on it again. It just seems to me like when you got a ballot initiative and it has a number signed to it, that should be the same number they use during the election. But that's just maybe me.
The reason for that, Brian, and that's a very good question. There are over 100 ballot initiatives filed every session or every year. So those, as they come in to be filed, are assigned a number. And then only a very small proportion of those will actually be on the ballot. And then there is a ballot numbering system that started years ago, and I can't remember most recently. Well, I remember part of the change to the ballot process was 71, and as we go through that process, those that actually make the ballot then get assigned a new number as they move forward to follow the actual initiative rather than all of the ones that have been submitted before. I know it's kind of confusing because, yes, the Wolf reintroduction was one in which, when it was submitted, was assigned a number. Now that it's made a ballot, it's assigned a number dependent on whether it's statutory or constitutional. So that's part of the reason the way that works. I know it's kind of frustrating and confusing at times, but I thought I might shed some light on that.
Well, I'm glad you did. Anyway, on the Wolf one, the Barnes position is, which probably nobody cares about, vote no on that one. Anyway, vote yes on those two that you just talked about earlier. Going back to that government getting around by raising fees, Jerry, was one of those ones, example of that, the one came out of the Carter Oil and Gas Commission about raising the mill levy? That seems like a tax, too.
There's no question that that is a tax. When you raise a mill levy, that is indeed a tax. Mill levy is specifically tied to a tax. Obviously, that's going to be in the courts, and we'll see how that one plays out before it's all set up.
And that one in particular had explained to me by former Senator Greg Brophy that mill levy increase was to help take care of the orphan wells that 181 actually created. So that's a double whammy. It just seems like they eliminated part of the revenue the state was relying on the oil and gas industry. Now they're trying to figure out a way to clean up the orphan wells that initiative. And that was another one I wanted to bring up to you sometime we can discuss down the road. But with Governor Polis coming out with an op-ed recently that said he was going to oppose any ballot initiative that tried to overturn 181, and he was also instructing the state legislature to not bring up anything until it was fully implemented. Jerry, do we really understand what's in 181? Because there was a whole new commission started about methane emissions out of 181 that could go outside the scope of oil and gas and maybe even go toward and be used against agriculture. I would think that everybody would like to see 181 overturned.
Well, and I think you're exactly right. I can tell you that, Noble Energy just sold out to Chevron, because they're a worldwide company that can maybe absorb in other parts of their operation the costs associated in Colorado that have been because of regulation. I can tell you a couple, 3 weeks ago, something like that, I was touring the one rig left in the state of Colorado for Noble Energy, doing work for Noble Energy. That's going to have an uncorrectable impact on Colorado. Again, a double whammy where eventually you are going to see the property taxes reduced because of the lack of oil and gas production, and then also severance tax dollars. The property taxes are used to fund schools. Severance tax dollars are used to fund other aspects such as water plant and those type of things. When property taxes don't fund schools, then the state has to come up with money to backfill those property taxes. In a downturn where they have less income because of what they have done to the oil and gas industry, that economy is going to be down as well, so they're not going to have as much tax revenue to be able to backfill the loss in property taxes, and that's going to be a double whammy on our schools as well. So the governor can say what he wants. I am hoping that people are starting to realize what this governor stands for and how he is destroying the entire state of Colorado.
I just don't understand what he means by the words fully implemented, Jerry. That, to me, as just a citizen, would worry that there's more in that legislation than even the legislators realized. Because 2022 is what he said. Wants to be fully implemented by 2022. What does the time have to do with it? That's what concerns me as a voter and as a citizen of Colorado and a huge supporter of oil and gas industry. And you know what? He just extended the coronavirus pandemic order recently, and he's also extended the mask order as well.
Oh, yeah, the mask order where a month ago he said that he was not going to issue. And then the next day he issued the mask order, and now he issued it again. And he continues to go down the path of playing king, quite honestly, or emperor, whatever you want to call it, without accountability to anybody, quite honestly. It's frustrating when we have given this governor the ability to just designate out of the blue that we are still in an emergency so he can do whatever he wants. And he is doing whatever he wants. It doesn't matter what it has to do with. I mean, last week, he issued an executive order about fires and banning fires in Colorado and allowing counties to do whatever they want to do with regard to fires in the name of the pandemic. I don't know how those two tie together, but this governor is on a power trip in which he wants to control everything outside of the pandemic as well, and he's using those powers to do that.
Once again, my guest, Colorado State Senator Sonnenberg, I know we've taken a lot of your time this morning, and I know you've got a farm and ranch to take care of as well in your off time. Was there anything else you'd like to make mention of before I let you go?
You know, the great thing about rural Colorado is we adapt and move forward and continue to produce the food and the fiber and the energy for the rest of the state. And we're going to continue to do that. Hopefully, the governor will see the message and listen to at least some of rural Colorado on how important we are to the state of Colorado, and listen to us a little bit so that we can continue to provide those things that he expects for his urban constituents.
You bet. I just wanted to do a little side note here. Don't forget, we are going to be at the Colorado State Fair. The barn will be there, and that is actually coming up August 28th through September 7th. I'll be there just for the junior livestock shows. It's open for exhibitors and their parents. We'll be webcasting that, the junior livestock shows, and then the championship drives. The sale will actually be webcast at liveauctions.tv, and that is on September 1st this year. And you can learn more about all that by checking out the interviews I did with General Manager Scott Stoller. But I was hoping you were going to be able to make it down to Pueblo for the Colorado State Fair, Jerry, but I'm just glad that, it's not happened yet, but I'm glad they got plans to make it happen for the 4-H and FFA youth.
Well, I am glad we're going to do the 4-H aspect. It is frustrating that only one parent apparently can travel with their youth instead of both parents and family the way they did some of this, and maybe it has to do with some of the new appointments to the fair board. I don't know the reasoning behind it. I'm just so proud of many of our local fairs that went ahead and continued and did their fairs. Many of them did more than other fairs, and it seems that everything turned out just fine at those fairs. And he talked about up in my neck of the woods, Phillips County. They still had their ranch rodeo. The Yuma County Fair had their PRCA rodeo. There, most all the counties included the 4-H and FFA livestock shows and auctions. Proud of them to do that. It obviously, this is a frustrating time for us in the state of Colorado. I'm thankful that the state fair is moving forward, even in the limited capacity that it is.
You bet. There was some sales. Weld County Junior Livestock Sale, by the way, happened. And they reported just this past week, $1 million is what they raised from that. And some of it was virtual, but people could bid and do their stuff online. And then they had in-person bidding as well. And that's going to be the same situation down at the state fair. Once again, the junior livestock shows will be online at liveshow.com/barnmedia/2020CSF. That's August 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, and 31st. Market goats, market hogs, market beef, market lambs, the FFA Heifer Wrangle Show, the National Western Stock Show Catch a Calf Show. That's going to be on the live stream webcast. And then that sale, September 1st, will be at liveauctions.tv. I want to thank my guest once again, Carter State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. I really appreciate your time. Each and every month we get a chance to visit. I wish you the best. Stay safe and God bless.
God bless you as well, Brian. Thank you.
Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg represents District 1 in the State Senate and represents the counties of Cheyenne, Elbert, Lincoln, Logan, Kit Carson, Morgan, Phillips, Sedgwick, Yuma, Washington, and Weld. You can learn more online at electsonnenberg.com.